So Srila Prabhupada had this extraordinary vision, mood. How is that going to go on for the next 10,000 years? It's up to us, it's up to you. It's really the essence of our responsibility to the Krishna consciousness movement. Even the concept of institution is management. We were talking earlier about how particular Srila Prabhupada was about good management. He wasn't like some kind of starry-eyed spiritualist who just chant Hare Krishna and everything will be okay. Prabhupada was very, very particular about how things were managed and who managed, and he didn't like to see things squandered and that everything was done in the right way. And then he had formulas for all of these things, and they're there. That's one very wonderful thing is that we've got so many biographies of Prabhupada, we've got Prabhupada's letters, although you don't know what people were asking, but at least you know what Prabhupada replied, which sometimes is sort of you lose the context of what's going on. We have certainly Prabhupada's lectures, and we have videos, and these are really invaluable, not just to know Prabhupada, but to know what are we supposed to be doing here. And the more we absorb ourselves in that and direct ourselves to that, the more we're true to our own calling, or at least what we owe Srila Prabhupada by being here. Anyway, maybe I should just... Anyway, any questions or comments that you'd like to make? What time is it?
It's 10 to 9.
10 to 9. 10 to 9. What's the program? Because we started an hour later. Who's organizing the program anyway?
I think it was supposed to be 6:30 to 9, but if we started later, then
okay. Anyway, let's. Anyone have any comments or questions? You're going to have to speak loud.
This morning's class at Bhaktivedanta Manor was about Varna and Ashram. And I wanted to ask you, in England, we have no facilities where grihasthas can live together in community, along with individuals from other ashrams, brahmacharya, etc., with facilities to grow food, working towards self-sufficiency, like those in Hungary, for example, at New Pakistan. And I was just wondering, is that something that you consider important for a yatra, like English yatra, to focus for that, or is it something that's not so necessary? I mean, would you consider it an obstacle for us, like if they hold us back as a yatra, not having those facilities?
I don't know, in case you didn't hear, he was asking about whether farming, in terms of Varnashram, asking about Varnashram and being able to feed ourselves, whether it's important. Well, if you like to eat, it's important. Because there isn't going to be a Tesco's forever. And there's only 3 days' supply of food in this country at any given time. In other words, when the British Channel shuts down, I mean, if it shuts down, and they can't fly or ship food in, then what's in the shops is good for 3 days for the country, and then that's all there is. So that was Srila Prabhupada's plan. Again, very, very practical. We don't just want to talk philosophy. We want to be able to eat as well. And history has it that eating isn't always a given. Let's give you an example. I spent between Christmas and New Year's with my mother and her sister. And I don't know what, one evening we were sitting around the table and they were telling me all their horror stories from Second World War. So my mother's sister told the story of some other, because, family is Jewish background, so My mother's sister, actually, she hid out for the whole duration of the war. Actually, in Budapest, it was only just for about a year and a half when the Hungarian government was sort of resisting Hitler's, although they joined the coalition, but they wouldn't ship out Jews right up until 1944. And but although they moved them into ghettos, you know, they lived in, the ghettos, everyone was all herded out, and everyone had to live in a certain part, and it was called the ghettos. But she was living in hiding in some relatives' places. Anyway, she told me some other relatives who, some of who survived, and I guess it's a little gruesome, but it gives you an idea of what, just answering the problem of eating. They were shipped off to concentration camps, and these people, they said, well, in one place, I don't know, the camp wasn't finished or something like that, so the Germans had them dig a hole, like inside this room or something, and they covered it with a grate, and they were inside. This was in the winter time, and they were inside naked, and that's how they lived, men, women, and children. And so she said that this family member who survived, there are others who didn't, said it was a real festival when a worm would crawl out of the side of the hole, because that's what they ate. Now I'm hoping that that type of thing doesn't repeat itself, but eating is a must. And if you're dependent on someone for eating, then if they cut off the supply, then you don't eat. And it's just history that the supply gets cut off. This is not, you don't have to be self-realized for that. This is very practical. You just go back, Second World War, First World War, so many other times, Irish potato famine, and so many other famines in India, British-caused famines where tens of millions of Indians starved to death just because they brought the rice over here and didn't give the rice to the Indians. It's amazing that this country even exists on what English did to the world. I guess it has to exist for all the people who they tortured, who wanted to become Britishers, and they took birth in England, so at least they get something out of their misery. And, so it's history. And therefore, whether you have a community, I don't know if that's even Varnashram. Varnashram is a little more than that. Varnashram is a social structure. Eating is even more basic than that. Eating is whether you've got a society or not, you've got to do it. And if you don't do it, if you can do it on your balcony, you can do it in your backyard, you can do it in your garage, you can do it anywhere. I mean, if you can eat, if you've got water, and if you've got food, you can more or less live through anything. But if you don't, especially if you don't have water, food is one thing, but water is you can eat, but if you can't drink, if you can drink, you can go without food, at least for a good while. But if you can't drink, that's the end of the world. So those things are really, really important. And also the quality. Because it's getting to the stage that what we buy is not food. It's something pumped full of chemicals and dyes and so many other things that passes off as food. But, you know, if you read the news, then you're reading all the time, this is carcinogenic and that's carcinogenic and this is carcinogenic. In other words, it's poison. It causes cancer. It's killing you. But we keep eating it. Why are we eating poison? So it's One thing is, what is it? And it may taste good. You make it taste good with spices, but it's not really, really food. Even carnies know that. Therefore, they get into this whole thing about having, let's say, organic foods and so on, and how much more expensive it is. In other words, to be poison-free, you got to spend more. And then that becomes a whole business. But what to speak of, you know, in America now they got this good karma food, because they figured it out that good vibrations, in other words, if you chant Hare Krishna around the food, then it's even better. Because they're also living entities, so make them feel good about being eaten. And, yeah. How can I say it's not a good idea to eat? I mean, that's what we're going to be doing. But we take it as a given. But it's not a given. It's a given because someone's doing it. But if they stop doing it, then it stops. And I know that in the village outside the farm in Hungary, some older people I was once talking to them, they're saying during the Second World War that because the people who people who lived in the cities, they just had nothing to eat. And sometimes people would come and, you know, they would come with their money and they would try and buy food. So, you know, eat your food. They would say, eat your money. You know, what good is your paper to us? It doesn't mean anything. Because at that time, the local currency was worthless. It didn't translate into anything. So even I saw my parents when the Hungarian Revolution broke out, I saw them taking wads of money like that to buy bread. Bread which previously was, you know, for coins you had to pay. And then the wads had to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and ultimately they ran out because you couldn't pay for it. But you can't eat the paper, but you can eat the bread. So that's, Srila Prabhupada warned that he told us 40 years ago. He says, grow your own food. So even if you don't do it on a farm, do it somewhere. And you find out how easy it is, how little area you need to grow, and how great it tastes. It's not a full-time job by any stretch of the imagination.
The last two world wars were preempted by economic strife.
Yeah.
And it's shaping up pretty ominously at the moment, I think, with the economics everywhere. You know, it's falling to pieces. Everybody's nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody knows how to remedy the problems in Europe. America's trying to, you know, convince itself that it can overcome this, you know, with some saber rattling and stuff like that, but or threatening to, you know, blow up this country, that country, to ensure oil supplies, etc. But everybody's running scared and nobody knows what to do. And it feels like it's going in that direction again. I mean, if we were to say to someone, next year there's going to be a war for sure, no one's going to be massively, oh, really? They're just not going to be surprised. It's in the ether. So I think that we have to, I mean, I don't, I'm the world's worst about farming. I don't like spades and dirt and everything like that.
But it's just like what comes out of the dirt.
I'm quite attached to that, yeah. But we do have to make plans.
Yeah, we can't. Once again, it's our philosophy. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Miserable temporary place. How much do you believe that? Do you really think that the life you're experiencing right now is going to go on perpetually? And if you shake your head and say no, then does that mean it's gonna change when you die, or is it gonna change before that? So it's just not it's not a it's not what history says, it's not what our philosophy, that is our philosophy, that yes, this is a miserable temporary place, and things are very, very drastically changing in the world, economically, politically, who knows about, well, here's global warming, it's like we're in the middle of spring or something, and it's the middle of January, and what all that is really going to add up to, but one thing for sure is we shouldn't think that everything's going to be like it was 5 years ago, 5 years from now. We should expect that things will change and prepare for that. But as Jayadeva Prabhu was saying, is things built up in the same way and previously when there was war, we don't know why there was war, but it wasn't, you know, the Germans started the Second World War. Hitler didn't get in because he sort of took over government. He was voted in by a democratic vote. Because there was hyperinflation in Germany, and he solved the problem. The best way to solve it is you start a war, then everyone stops thinking about the fact that there's austerity. Who's going to accept all these people who are just so intoxicated with sense gratification? And now the countries of the world have to convince them that they have to accept austerity. No one's going to accept austerity. That's why they're rioting in Greece. And they're going to riot, they're rioting here, and they're going to riot everywhere. No one's going to, after they just intoxicate people, that yes, you can have anything and sense gratification, and then you tell them now you can't have it, and now your income has to, you lose your job, or your income has to decrease by 50%. And someone sent me this article in Greece, how over the last 6 months, mothers are just bringing their children to health services, to monasteries, and they're just leaving them there. Says I can't afford to, you know, some poor people can't afford to feed my child. I says, well, you take care of him. It doesn't look very good out there. So at least we of all people should be clear about that and not think that everything is necessarily bright and rosy. If it is, great, we'll chant Hare Krishna. If not, then we'll also chant Hare Krishna. But we should at least make basic preparations to ensure that we can get that which is needed.
The new successful up and coming, upwardly mobile people are buying into small holdings now, not townhouses. Small holdings. Looking for land, and the survival kits that you can buy for 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 pounds, the dried foods and things like that, they're experiencing 400 to 500% increase in profits over the last year. People are really getting into it, they've got money. Should we take a leaf out the Mormon's book and the store's materials, or?
Especially if you're in the city. It's not a difficult thing to do. You've got stocks anyway, it's just a question of how much stock. Don't need a lot of things. Wheat, rice, sugar, oil,
salt.
You just rotate it. Now, should we go on to some brighter topics before it's too late? Anyone?
I have a question. It's about the spiritual master. Okay, we are devotees, most of us are devotees, 5, 10, 15 years, 20, or you 40, so I don't know. So, personally, I'm trying to follow my spiritual master instructions, checking my rounds, following his instructions. But how to work on to deepen how to work on that to deepen my relationship with my spiritual master, to go deeper and deeper and deeper.
I think the primary way of having a deeper relationship with spiritual master is trying to have a deeper relationship with Krishna, because that's the spiritual master's instruction. We're certainly, like we're saying, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada, but we're not the personality cult. So our main focus, we're personality cult, where Krishna is the personality. And our main thing is to be Krishna conscious and to make Krishna the center of our lives. And then Krishna's devotees are the center automatically because they're connected. So our focus is to be Krishna conscious, and we should work on being Krishna conscious. And part of that is obviously being conscious of spiritual master, deepening our relationship with him. But that's the primary business. Our primary business is to be Krishna conscious devotees. And jasya devi para bhakti tatha devi tatha guru. And both those things are there. They're inseparable. So with where Krishna consciousness moving. Someone else?
Pashana.
Who?
Pashana.
Oh.
To ask a practical question, you were speaking about health and devotees having various health issues. Often kind of get asked this question where devotees are experiencing difficulties, say observing fasts, Ekadashis, whatever, if they're taking medication, they need to take some grains, take that medication, or if they've got health issues where they have to have some form of grain every day. So they ask about, you know, how they deal with Ekadashi in that way.
If you really, really have to, then I guess you have to. I don't know whether it's medically you need grains, or whether just having some type of foodstuff is sufficient to eat medication. If you have to do it, then you have to do it. Then that's right. But if you don't have to do it, and you say you have to do it, then Krishna knows. And then you're breaking your codicil. Even I was just mentioning to someone the other day, when I was reading Sanatana Goswami, says that the children from 8 years old should follow a codicil. Fasting from grains. And it says observing Janmashtami also. He was meaning fast till midnight. I guess they're Brahminical children.
Brahmi's kids too, but they don't think they do the Janmashtami. They do every Ekadashi.
Yeah. Fasting from grains is not, if you're eating, it's not a real problem. So many good things to be done. Something else? I'll chant a little and then eat a little.
You were speaking about having classes over there, and just talking about worshipping deities, especially Radha Krishna deities, and how serious that needs to be taken, and that perhaps you have to take birth again. You know, just if you haven't made proper provisions, then you have to take birth again just to take care of them. And I was just in your podcast recently, you were speaking about how Dr. Gopinath, who was worshipped by Lord Brahma, and then he was found by Radha, wasn't it?
Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya. And also with Srinathji, Madhavendra Puri's deity, that he was underground and found. So I was just wondering who left them underground. And
we don't know.
Why would they not still worship?
I wrote I wrote quite a bit on that. Some of it was sort of edited out, just the history of Vrindavan. Because we know sort of a beginning from Skanda Purana when Vajra makes these deities and populates Vrindavan. And then for a long time, well, more or less up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, they don't have much history. There's some things. Shaksha Gopal, he's like 800 years, he's like 300 years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. And there was a temple there at the site of the Govindaji temple. But Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a lot of these stories where the deities are, they're in the ground, they're in the bushes, they're in the forest, they're in the lakes. And it's always because some invaders have come, and whether it was the Greeks called Vrindavan the city of gods. That was the term for Vrindavan. But mostly it was sort of after the Mohammed invasions, 1980. And what happened prior to that, we don't know. But you could expect it was more of the same. I don't think that there was like 4,000 years of free and easy life. Most likely it was the same situation. And then during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, all these deities get excavated and they all get found. And they all have their different stories, very similar stories. Balaram Dalji in Baladev, which is in the south tip of Vrindavan. And he was in this lake, the Shir Sagar Lake, and his pujaris must have left him there in a hurry because he was upside down. His base was, well, it looked like a rock, and there was a cow would come there every day, and the cowherdman would see that this cow would come to the side of the lake, and on top of this rock would just always keep leaving her milk. So then they told this Balabhacharya's son, Vitila, and he then went and saw that stone and started pulling at it and realized that there was a deity attached to the other side. He's really big. He's the biggest deity in Vrindavan. It's like 6 feet tall, 2 meters tall, something like that. Yeah, they just dumped him in the lake and ran. They didn't have time to do anything else. It was upside down. Yeah, a lot of deities they were put in lakes. I'm just thinking of who was what's the temple right beside Manasiganga? Haridev, he was also in this Ratnakund on the other side of Govardhan. They also dropped him, Pujari dropped him in the lake and ran. I guess Muslims don't like swimming, so it's a good place to. At least the soldiers didn't go swimming with all their armor on, and so they just went.
Shankaracharya pulled out deities from rivers near to temples as well in his ministry, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a constant phenomenon that you have, because these deities, they're there. I mean, you can say literally forever, because some are millions of years old in India, but at least thousands of years, and a lot of things takes place. We only live for so long. We're lucky if, you know, we get one life of peace. So they go through a lot of they go through a lot of difficulty. And they just go through a lot of difficulty for us. Because they could just disappear if they wanted to, or walk away. But they don't. They just stay there, and they accept devotee service. And they accept that type of inconvenience just to give facility for conditioned souls to serve them. Let's chant a little. Is there anything else I need to say? Anyway, this is sort of an unscheduled trip. I was really coming here to sort of meet some politicians, but that Hungarian politicians, that didn't pan out. Or at least now Gauri and Shruti and Pranapus went to meet with him along with some other well-wishers, so you just get a report from them, and then I'll come back sometime in, I don't know, April, May, I'll wait on the first lot. Now the way we're printing the books is they'll come in two lots, the first four and then the other five, so when the first four are finished, I will come and deliver them. The layout and production, and the artists finish drawing at the end of the month. That's their deadline. And now it's just laying out and printing. And I can't tell you how much it costs, but shoot for £300. Because the printers, well, we keep sort of changing goalposts, so it's really difficult for them to. When I was in Canada, I saw some old books and what the bindings look on those. So I asked them if they could. Well, unfortunately, they can't do all of these things anymore. But the books used to be beautiful. Now they're really just. Yeah, well, they run the mill, they just run them up on a machine. But a lot of that work was all hand done. Beautiful. The paper isn't what I wanted it to be. If it would be, paper cost would be 10 times what it is now, which means the book cost is. I'm trying to get a real costing on what the books cost, but they probably cost about twice what devotees are paying for them. Artists, 5 years. Keshav Bharati Maharaj, the Chittapabhu, 3 years each. Plus him traveling back and forth from India, and the Chittan as well traveling from America. Their maintenance. And then everything else that goes along with it. So, you know, the printing, the book itself is just sort of a fraction of what it costs. Of course, it doesn't include me in any way. Any expenses, and there are lots of other things involved. But anyway, I hope it'll be satisfactory.
Will you take some time off from writing for a while to give us a body of rest?
Well, right now I need to take time off from the Hungarian government to give my body a rest. They're not allowing me to do that. Because I still have things to do with the book. When it's completely finished, then I'll start writing. Not like this. I'm not getting back into this mode again. But especially the last 2.5 years, I was really incognito. But I'll continue.
Just with regards to the book, just so the boys know,
ordering is invaluable because, you know, we are in a recession, so we don't have any money sitting around just to print. It helps that when devotees warrior pain advanced, and ultimately we're just printing as much as it can afford. Interested printer. I asked him the other day, are you still going to be in business when it's time to print? He says, I'll be in business. It's just, I got lots of work to do. The problem is that a lot of the people don't pay. They just order, and then they don't have money to pay.
Such a desperate attention for people in business these days.
Okay, let's chant Hare Krishna briefly, and then let's take prasadam.